I am in a playground for a lot of people right now. If you wanted to redesign or get yourself a new kitchen, this is the place you want to come to. I'm here at Cabinet Masters here in Oakley. It's not unlike many, many high-end places that just gives you choice after choice after choice after choice. I mean, look at all the options you have. First of all, you could choose what kind of drawers you want, what kind of doors that you want, all the different finishes, all the colors, all the textures. How about this one? Let's spend a lot of money on something that looks old. That makes a lot of sense, but it does look cool. If I had the jack, I would do this one right here. And as if that was the only decisions you had to make. No, you have to figure out what kind of little knobs you want on your cabinets, what kind of little handles you want on your drawers. Oh, all the colors, all the textures, I don't know what to do. Bam! We haven't even started yet. Look at all of this stuff. Some of us are overwhelmed, some of us are excited, and the fun is just beginning, because once you figure out what your counter is, you gotta figure out, do you want bullnose, do you want chamfer, do you want rope, what do you want to line? And of course, that's after you make the decision of whether or not you want Corian, whether or not you want tile, formica, granite, marble, or faux marble, and what exact kind of colors do you want on faux marble? Yahoo says that the average economy kitchen overhaul today is $25,000. We've just given some of the average things you have to look at. We haven't even gotten into things like appliances, wall coverings, artsy things. This is a big deal. Why is this a big deal for us? This is a big deal for us. Part of it because it's fun. Part of it because we like giving our creativity. And also because this is the place in the house where everybody goes and everybody congregates. Wasn't too long ago when only the people who were in the lowest part of the totem pole would go to the kitchen. The women who were seen as the lowest in the totem pole years and years ago in an incredibly backward America would be there. Or if you had enough money, only the servants would go there. Now it is the place where everyone congregates and where you want to hang out. I'm not sure if it's the textures. I'm not sure if it's all the different objects that makes you at home. I'm not sure if people are doing activity like cutting up things and you can be there in the midst of activity. I just know this, everyone at my house always ends up in the kitchen, and just about every significant conversation that's had happens in the kitchen. What would it be like if we put as much strategic thought into what our family was supposed to look like, what our personal life was supposed to look like, as we do with what our kitchen is supposed to look like? What would it be like if we made every decision today the way we would want our life to be 15, 20, 30 years from now? You know what? The decisions you make when you choose a kitchen, you will live with for years and years and years and years. And the decisions you make as a human being in your moments of sobriety about where you want your life to go, what your passions are, you will live with those not just for the rest of your life, you will live with those for eternity. I want to invite you into the kitchen today and throughout this whole series as we talk about things that are core to our life, and specifically today we're going to talk about our portfolio of passions. I don't want to be more excited about a kitchen model upgrade than I am about God and what He's doing in the world. That is the thing that I'm more excited about than anything else. And the day I get more excited about bullnose or cabinets is the day something's gone cold in my heart, even though I do like bullnose and cabinets. So hey, let's get started on where we're going today in housework. Well, I'm sitting at a mock island in the middle of a kitchen. That's where most of our conversations happen in our house. I'm actually in a construction zone, as you've noticed. And if you've ever done any remodeling on a house or a place you reside, you know that there's some pre-planning you have to do. And the first thing you do is you just take a look at what it is that you want. What is it that makes you passionate about life? What are your lifestyle rhythms? And then you want to have a space that actually accommodates that. That's the step number one in housework. And we're going to be doing some housework in this series. We're going to do some stuff personally. What is it that I personally want to see happen in our life? We're going to make personal applications. And we're also going to make bridges throughout this series, doing the housework in the house of Crossroads, people who call Crossroads home. What are some important things that we need to hunker down on right now? Because the next six-month run that we're in is going to be exciting six-month run, the most important 6 months in our history. In October and November, we're going to have a campaign. And we're not going to be in continual campaign mode, but this series, we just want to talk about some things that have us brewing in our mind as the summer goes on. And so that's what we're doing. And let's pray before I go any further. God, I'm thankful for everyone who's here today, because everyone is here. They're here because they want to grow. Everyone is here because they want something
in their life. They want you. And that's why we're here versus any number of other places. And so I'm praying that you would meet us where we are and you would answer the desires of our hearts by taking us to new places, helping us to see you. And I'm asking that you'd help my words be true to your mind and that you would help me to anticipate what some folks may be thinking to meet them right where they are. Thank you for your grace. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. One of my favorite quotes is by Dwight D. Eisenhower, former president, former World War II hero and general. And he says this. He said, "We succeed only as we identify in life and war or anything else a single overriding objective and make all other considerations bend to that one objective. Understanding what is it that I'm passionate about and then slotting everything behind that versus just going with the flow every day and doing what seems right in the moment, saying, what is it? What is the thing that I'm about? Where am I going?" I think about this when I think about the verse in the Bible in the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 11, when it says, "Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord." Never be lacking in zeal, spiritual fervor. Zeal, you know, when's the last time you heard zeal used in a positive way? We talk about people who are overzealous. She's so overzealous. Or he's a real zealot. I mean, if you're a zeal, you have zeal, or if you're a zealot, you're just looked at as being a wacko. You're just an extremist. You're a fry short of a Happy Meal. There's just something that's just not right in your life, because in America, we don't want anybody to get too excited. We all want to just sort of stay right where we are, have a nice, even, balanced life, be sane, be reasonable. And anybody who has a life of impact has an unreasonable life. Anybody who has a life of impact does not live balanced. They weight a certain thing up and they go after things. And this is what the Bible says. Have a life of zeal. Zeal is this word that means speed. It's where we get the word speed from, not Speedo. We don't want any Speedos in here. But, you know, speed. Speed, you know, this idea of I got to go. I got to do something. You ever been on the sideline or wanting to say something in a meeting and your foot's going, you're like, "Oh man, I got to say this. I feel like a dog right now." You know, you're going, I need to get in. This is an example of what it means to be zealous. You can't wait. You're chomping at the bit. Also says, be fervent in spirit. Fervent, it's a word where we get effervescent. It's the idea of a pot of water that's on a stove and is boiling. It's saying that we should be like God. Those of us who want to trend our lives towards God, that might not be where you are, and that's great. Crossroads, all kind of different paths and different people or different places right now. But it says, if I want to align myself with the God of the Bible, I need to be boiling. I need to be putting myself in places where bubbles are popping up because I'm being heated up. I want to stick a blowtorch up in my rear end, not up there, just there. And I want to be hot for God. I want to be hot. We're going to be talking about hot in a moment, but I want you to make sure that you see that this idea of being zealous, this idea of being passionate, being fervent in spirit, this is something we have to capture. And I don't know what you're passionate about or what you're going to be zealous for or what you're going to weight yourself toward, but I'm encouraging you this 4 weeks to identify what that is. We have some questions in your program. You're going to be able to work out and figure out what are those things. We have a problem in our country with being motivated. We have a problem with being fired up. We have a problem with being zealous. I believe we dummy down our emotions and our feelings, so much so that there's an entire cottage industry that has erupted of people who are here to pump you up. The motivational speaking industry is all here to motivate those of us who don't have zeal. Just the character of, you know, needing to fire us up, needing to be motivated. And this is a good thing. It's a good thing to want to be motivated, but it's a great thing when you learn what it is you're motivated for, what is in your portfolio of passions, and you give yourself the freedom to bubble. You give yourself the freedom to get excited about that. Now, we're here today, regardless of what you believe about God, what you believe about the Bible, we're here today because 2,000 years ago, Jesus built into a group of people who were passionate, zealous about who he was. And after he was dead, after he was crucified, resurrected, buried, these folks went on mission. They were zealous to go after who he was and spread his gospel, his good news, that God cares about you. He's come for you. He wants to build into you. And they went after it. There were 12 guys that he built into in his most inner circle. 11 of those guys survived after he was crucified. One of them offed himself. And so there was left 11 that were left. And of those 11, they went out all over the world, to the ends of the earth, every region, going passionately to tell people about God actually came down in our midst. He actually was here. And of those 11, 10 of them were killed by unnatural circumstances. They were martyrs. They were crucified. In the case of Peter, as legend says, when he was to be crucified because the Roman government and the religious authorities still were not liking this influence that Jesus had, he said, I'm not good enough to be crucified the way Jesus was. Crucify me upside down. Other followers were tied to horses, and they were the horses' rear ends were slapped, and as they went off, all their appendages tore off. Others were thrown to lions. Others were stuck inside of fresh animal skins, rolled up and settled in the sun until they shrunk and smothered to death. I mean, brutal, brutal things, but they would not recant. They would not be reasonable. They would not mellow out at all. They were fervent. And only one actually dies of natural causes. His name is John. He's also known as John the Beloved, who at the Last Supper, he was the one reclining against Jesus' breasts. Although I guess he did have them. And he went off to Greece in his later years, John did, went off to Greece and experienced some supernatural visions. This was back in the days when people in Greece actually would work. They would work and they wouldn't actually try to live off the government and bankrupt all of their systems. So all of the, other people around him were working, but he was actually, nothing like political economic humor, all good. So he's on this Greek isle, and he's getting these supernatural encounters with Jesus. And there's, my favorite section in the book of Revelation is when there's seven churches that are written to, seven churches have a unique message. And the one we're going to look at today is the church of Laodicea. Laodicea was a town of about 13,000 people. That was a relatively well-sized town at that point. That's about Crossroads' normal attendance on a weekend. So it's as if he's talking to all of Crossroads, except he's not really talking to the entire city of Laodicea. He's talking to a smaller percentage of the people in that town who at one point were fired up, who had received Jesus, who were baptized, who were excited about that. And just like Crossroads, there's a smaller percentage beyond our weekend attendance of people who said, yeah, I'm there. I do believe Jesus is the Son of God. I've received him. I'm going places. And there's a message that Jesus has for those folks. And for all of us in here, regardless of where you are, you can learn something from this. Here's what it says. By the way, Laodicea, before I go there, this is the banking capital. This is a place where there is finance. They've got plenty of money. This is a place where they have a thriving textile industry. They also have salves and different things that they create, ointments and stuff. And so it's a city that really is bustling and on the move in terms of its economy. And here's what Jesus says. He says, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were either one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. You say, I'm rich, I've acquired wealth, and do not need a thing. But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in fire so you can become rich, and white clothes to wear so that you can cover your shameful nakedness, and salve to put on your eyes so you can see. Jesus says, you're all impressed with your riches and your accounts and your banking. Jesus says, I'm not impressed at all because you're actually spiritually impoverished. At one point, you were rich, you were going the right direction, and now you're just bankrupt. You're impressed with your textile industry. Actually, in terms of honoring me right now, you're naked. You got nothing on you that's impressing me about your zeal or your fervency at all. Salve, you need to take some of that salve that you guys create, that ointment, put it on your own eyes because your eyes aren't working very well. You do not have spiritual eyes that are seeing the truth. You're believing spiritual lies instead. This is a very stinging teaching for churchgoers, for people who apparently believe the right things. And Jesus is Jesus is just throwing down on this right now. And it's interesting that he starts off by saying, I know your deeds. That's what he says. He says, I know your deeds. We talked in the last series about lavish. This is not about impressing God. This is not about performing for God. God approves of his followers. He lavishes love. It is of his goodness. We don't need to impress him. But whenever you're passionate about something, actions follow. And actually, which comes first, passions or actions? I don't know. Passions hopefully drive actions, but I'll tell you what, actions also fuel passions. One comes before the other comes before that one. They both go together. And when the Bible talks about deeds or works, it's not saying this is the way you improve your standing before God, or this is the way that God accepts you. It just goes hand in hand. It shows your spiritual health. It shows who you are. And have you ever been outside and there's a bottle of water there or a glass of water, and you thought it was the one you had just poured, or you thought it was fresh, and you took it up, you put it in your mouth, and all of a sudden you realize it's been sitting out in the sun, you picked up the wrong one, and all of a sudden you have this like nastiness in your mouth, you're going, you know, you're not sure what to do. I mean, do you swallow it and get it over with? Do you leave it in your mouth and hopefully your 98.6 degree body does something with it? Or do you? Jesus says, that's the way you make me feel. I put you in my mouth, I'm going, oh man, it's just, you're distasteful right now. Now, this sounds really intense. It is really intense, but it's really helpful to understand what's happening in Laodicea. Here's a little map of the Roman Empire, a portion of the Roman Empire. And Laodicea is right here in the Mediterranean region. And when they start talking about hot water, cold water, they think about their northern neighbor, the city of Hierapolis, about 7 miles north. Hierapolis is known for its natural hot springs. It had hot water. And if you wanted to ache or salve your achy muscles, or you believe there's some supernatural ability that these bubbling hot waters would have, you would go to where the hot water is. And the same way, their neighbor 7 miles to the, or 12 miles to the east, Colossae, it was known for its mountain water that was coming off the mountains. It was very, very, very cool drink. And everyone knew, if you wanted to go get a cool drink, you go to Colossae. That's where you go. And right in the middle of these two water extremes is Laodicea. You know, if you're hot and you got hot water, you can do something with that. You can ache muscles or soothe muscles. You can make tea. All kinds of stuff you can do. If it's cold, there's things you can do with that. You can try to make swelling go down. You can have a cool, refreshing drink. But Laodicea is right in the middle. They get their water from both places. And by the time it comes to them, it's just lukewarm. It doesn't have any purpose. It doesn't have any real thing that's of usefulness. Actually, if you go to the area of the world today, you can see archaeological digs and ruins. And here's a little snapshot of where Laodicea was. And you can see up on the hillside, this is their stadium, archaeologists believe. And here in the foreground, you've got an aqueduct pipe, a little piece of this aqueduct pipe. And this is some of the remnants of where the waters would come. And so Jesus is saying to the Laodiceans, man, I wish you had a point. You don't have a point. You don't see that you are uniquely positioned to have a purpose. You've lost passion for me. You've gone after money instead of me. You've gone after business instead of me. You've gone after the approval of others. What happened to the fervency I saw in you? What happened to the zeal that took place inside of you? There's something winsome when you're around somebody who has passion. Whatever it's for, if it's for their sports team, if it's for their place of employment, if it's for their family, whatever it is, there's something winsome when somebody is on fire. I see that little aqueduct pipe. I'm reminded of a friend of mine who's a chef and got an expensive place, and I joked with him years ago that I didn't really like going to his place so much because it was expensive, and after all, no matter how good the food was, 12 hours later, it was going to end up in a sewage pipe, so what was the point? And he was kind of bummed out about that, but I think I redeemed myself when we talked about pleasure during the Lavish series and how God's give us, you know, taste buds to explode to make us feel good. But I get turned on by people who are zealous about something, and here's somebody in the culinary world who's zealous. It's somebody I saw in 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, and thankfully, there's the internet to relive a pretty interesting episode. Take a look at this. And interesting seeing somebody who is just fired up about what they're doing, and they're acting on it. I couldn't help but write down some of his phrases here. They call it spreading the gospel of culinary stuff. The gospel, we talked about gospel during lavish. Gospel is a Bible word. It's actually an ancient word that means good news. Good news, man. Zealots always feel, hey, this is good news. You got to have this techie device. Man, good news. You got to do what I'm doing. Good news. You got to feel and believe what I'm feeling just because I'm excited. This is helpful for you. This is what happens when zeal comes into your life. How about this line? He says, your life is going to change forever. Your life is going to change forever. You could say that's ridiculous, or you could also say, that's what somebody who's zealous believes. This is going to matter to you. Let me tell you something. I want to be more excited about God than anybody else is about their waistline. I want to be more excited about Jesus than anybody else is about their quarterly statements. I want to be more excited about God than I am about motorcycles. I want to be more excited about God about anybody. I mean, I want to have a relationship with the eternal being that's created me, built into me, built into you. That's good news. And it's something just fundamentally wrong when we go through motions of going to church and doing this and how to do that. Where's the vivacity? Where's the fervency? Where's the bubbles? Where's the heat? Where's the zeal? Where's the speed coming from? So this week, I'm encouraging you in your own personal life to do this, or if you're with some friends, to have these conversations. If you live with some folks, or if you're in a family in your household, gather, sit down around your kitchen counter like the Tome family is going to be doing this week, and it's in your program. Take them home and ask yourself these questions. Number one, in your portfolio of passions, what are your dreams and goals? You know, in your portfolio of passions, this portfolio will be what dictates what the architect does, how he creates a house, based on what's in his portfolio that you've told him is important to you. So in your family's portfolio of passion, ask, what's your dreams, goals? The things that you naturally dream about, the things that you are planning for in 5 years, that's your passions. That's what you're zealous about. And I'm not trying to judge what any of those things are right now for us. Just be in touch with those, what those are for you, and then weight your life up. Another question we'll be asking around our family is this. What are the core values of your household? What is it that you just do? What is it, the stuff that just happens? Now, one of our little sayings in our household is Tome's hustle. It's one of our core values. We hustle. What is for you? What are the things that are just important for you? Three. Here's one. What makes your household unique? If somebody was to come and spend time with you for a week or stay with you, what would they notice and think, boy, that's weird? Wow, interesting that you do that. You're really into that, aren't you? Well, if you can identify how you're unique, you're probably accidentally discovering your wired-in passions. Notice that. Number four, what is your number one priority as a household right now? It's interesting. Right now, we even have to say things like number one priority. The etymology of the word priority meant only one. We now talk about priorities. That was a word that was never meant to be pluralized. Your priority is the thing that you go after, the thing that you're fervent about, the thing that you're bubbling about. Speaking of bubbling, I think my pits are getting wetter and wetter up here. It is summertime. Is it that obvious up on the, yeah, it is, sorry. My second shirt of the day. My goodness, I am fervent up here, aren't I? Okay, so, let me bridge from our personal passion and talk a little bit about, in the Crossroads house, some things that relate to us and our portfolio of passions. A couple days ago, I was working out at the gym where I go, and I don't know if you work out at a gym or not, but it's interesting when you think about the unwritten rules, the unwritten code in those facilities. One of the unwritten rules is never look somebody else in the eyes. And if you do, it should be only by accident and quickly divert your eyes someplace else. I mean, you really can't look at somebody very long unless you're on the treadmill and they're doing something where they can't see you looking at them. Then you can look at them. But there's this unwritten code that just kind of don't communicate. And so you can be going to a gym for years and see somebody for dozens and dozens of times, but never have any connection or substantive conversation with them at all. And then when you do talk, it's kind of interesting, you know. And so this happened to me this last week. I was done working out. I was walking out, and this woman kind of looked at me, and I looked at her, and all of a sudden she was still looking at me. I'm thinking, you're breaking the code. What are you doing? And she said, Father Brian. And I said, excuse me? She said, Father Brian, Crossroads, you're Crossroads guy. I said, well, I'm Brian. She said, oh, well, she goes on and she says, I've been coming to Crossroads for 6 weeks or so. And she says, it's been great for me. My boyfriend and I have been coming. It's just been awesome. And I asked her, what's your background? Where'd you come from? And find out that she had zero official corporate religious spiritual experience. And so that makes sense. You know, you assume that somebody who does this for a living, you call them father. You don't have any church background to understand some of the nuances and different faith traditions. And so, you know, that's kind of where she was coming from on that. And we talked, and man, I tell you what, I walked out of there boiling. I walked out of there with a pep in my step, because that is why Crossroads is here. That is why our number one portfolio of passions is for average people who are far from an understanding of the good news that there is a God that wants to pour grace on you, that it's come to identify with you. Good news, your life can totally go a whole new direction. You can feel a connection with your Creator. That will never, ever, ever get old for me. When I heard Dan talk, what he talked about early in the service, about what happened with his faith journey and all that, I just sit there going, oh my goodness, I'm down in the front row going, put me in, coach. I want to go right now. I will never get tired of that. Talked with a guy this last week, older guy I know, and he's got an adult son, and his son's been coming around Crossroads for a bit of time, and as a result of God getting in touch with him through this structure that we have here, he got baptized a couple weeks ago, came to relationship with Jesus, and is in recovery. The guys who actually baptized him are people he met here at Crossroads who are walking through recovery. I hear that, I go, oh man, that's how a church is supposed to operate. Speak to you where you are right now, give you an ideal of what life could be like, and then people gather around you. It will never get old. I was talking with Kim Botta this last week, who oversees a kids club here in our Oakley site, and she talked about one of their small groups that happened. You know, back in kids club right now, there's volunteers that are working back there, and part of what happens is they'll break off into little huddle groups, little small groups. And she was telling a story about this little guy not too long ago in this little small group sitting on the floor. He said to everybody in the group, I'm a bully. I'm a bully. It's this little guy. And volunteers trying to figure out what to do with that. And this other little boy in the group says, well, you know what? I used to be a bully, but Jesus really came into my life and helped change me. And I'm not a bully any longer, and you don't have to be one either. These little guys are doing this, and as volunteers see this whole thing happen, and as time goes on, this guy who self-selected and self-identified himself as a bully, as a bad boy, has been totally transformed, totally transformed. And I will never, ever, ever get tired of that, ever, ever. That is why, by the way, the most important thing Crossroads does, the most money we put things into, the things that are the number one priority, the first passion that we have, is helping average Cincinnatians come in contact with their Creator. Number one thing, doesn't matter if you're white collar, blue collar, P&G or plumber, whatever you are, we want to meet you where you are and speak your dialect. Actually, we want to go to you. See, God actually came to us. He was up in heaven, the Bible teaches, and he took on flesh and came to be among us. He didn't just shout down instructions to us. He came to us. And so we want to go to people. Here's a little map for you. We showed you Laodicea before. This is Cincinnati. This is not your vascular system. This is Cincinnati here. And we did a sampling of our database. And here's a Crossroads sampling of our database laid over this map right here. That's a lot of red. That's just a sample. That's just some of our little dots. And interesting things, you can see some pockets of intense activity in different parts. And you also can see this Crossroads being an east side thing is a myth. Look at all the west siders in there. We got any west siders in the house? Oh, man. Very, very, very cool. This is why we're so excited about what's happening in Mason, our second site. Oakley's one site. Masons on their site, because it's the idea, just as the early followers of Jesus went to places like Laodicea, went there, we're going to places that are just a few miles away to have a community presence, to be a blessing in that community, because people who are far from God, aren't churchgoers, aren't going to say, "Ooh, I'm going to drive 35 minutes to some place down there." No, there's got to be some place in their place where there can be also fervent, feverish activity in a local place that can impact the school district and everything. This is why, as we've been growing, we're going to start 5 additional sites over the next 4 years. We're going to have 7 sites over the next 4 years. That'll be total all over the region. And it's because we are excited, passionate about average people coming into relationship with Jesus that will warm them over. Also, as we do this, we are continuing to build a cohesive army of love. We're taking on bigger projects like WizKids. It's continuing to grow, building into kids that are educationally and financially challenged, trying to figure out how to take them to a place of holistic learning, and that program has been expanding. All kinds of stuff have been happening because we're not just getting people into an event where you can hear about the Bible. We're actually building an army of love that's impacting the region. And so in our city, in our region, we're concerned about poverty. It's the second thing that's major in our portfolio of passions is Cincinnati poverty. I was reading in the Business Courier this last week an article and grabbed it offline about Jobs Plus, which is one of our partners that we're working with in the CityLink Center, which is a group of churches and nonprofits coming together to do holistic healing, holistic nurturing to get people out of cycles of poverty. It's a first-in-class system that's happened here in Cincinnati. I'm more excited about it now than I ever was. And this even got me going even more with Jobs Plus, this article about them, talking about this guy who they've helped. And just the first couple paragraphs say it all. It says this: most of his first paycheck went to settle debts and pay bills. Then it was nice to go out and buy my first pair of brand new shoes, Paul Johnson says. It's awesome. When someone comes to having job skills, they can get a job and they can buy their own brand new pair of shoes. And it happens because other people are passionate about this and partner alongside of it. We're not going to go into this big right now, but in October, November, we're going to talk more about why we believe in CityLink, why it's controversial, why people don't like it. And even when somebody doesn't like it, it doesn't matter. We're doing it. We're going to put about $10 million into CityLink going after that. We believe God has blessed us. We want to jump in here. And you have to understand, when you feel called to something, when you feel Jesus would be a certain place, you're zealous. You don't stick your finger up in the air and go, people don't like this idea. Maybe I'll shrink back. That's exactly what balanced weenies do who don't have a calling in their life. When God gets a hold of your life, you get zealous about things. You get passionate about love. You're willing to unbalance yourself and go a certain place. Is there anything in your life that you do that dissatisfies the masses? If not, you got a passion problem. You got a major passion problems. When you're passionate, you're weighted and you're making decisions that other people disapprove of. And we're just passionate here about trying new creative things to move the needle in the poverty rate here in Cincinnati, which is not in a good place at all. We're passionate about that. We've also seen how God has really been moving in us with South Africa over the last several years. We started off just putting a roof on an educational building over there and went to building the largest privately funded AIDS hospice at the time in the country. And now we have sent thousands of people over there. We have some people living there right now. We've got a health clinic that's going. And we actually are going to be taking the health initiative, we'll talk about this again in the campaign, on multi-site in South Africa. We have a plan where we're going to be taking little medical clinics in all the outlying townships, all the outlying sectors of the township. We got with a senior official, the South African government, who saw the plan that includes having little health workers that nurture people in that area. And that senior official in the government said, "This is the best plan for medical care I've ever seen for South Africa. Best one." And said, "This is actually doable and reproducible." We're going to be rolling that out. And I'll tell you what, this is what happens when people align themselves with their passion. Creativity happens. God's Spirit flows into them and things start to bubble. We are seeing that in a huge, big way in South Africa. I think we have a photo of one of the girls, women that we helped when I was over there. She was couldn't walk 5 steps without stopping. And here's our doc, Jason Singh, on the ground and doing some aftercare with this woman that she's able to stand and looks healthy because of getting attention. Prayers, yes, and also physical help. The fourth and final thing that's going to be a part of our campaign, it's the major sector of our passion portfolio, is that we are passionate about what's happening with the sex trade industry in India. We are passionate about bringing girls to a new place of healing. We are passionate that the girls need to come to Jesus's right hand and need to feel his acceptance and be rehabilitated emotionally, spiritually, and occupationally. There's a bottleneck right now in India. Girls are kidnapped and sold into slavery, or parents who are deluded into thinking they're going to give their daughter a better opportunity by going to a foreign city and getting an airline job, so they're told by perhaps a distant uncle, when they send their daughter away, that distant uncle takes them and shoves them into a brothel and they give forced sex acts for the rest of their life. And when these girls are rescued, there is so much undoing that needs to take place. And one of the reasons why more girls aren't rescued is because there's not enough places that are good, sanctioned home to put these girls. And we're going to put seven figures at this as well. We're going to build multi-site homes all over India. And we have a guy who was on the ground in India for 2.5 years, a former assistant DA, understands all this as well, who's on our staff helping us formulate that with a bunch of other volunteers. So I'm telling you, this stuff, I that's the fifth time I'm talking about it now, I will never get tired talking about it. I'm zealous about this. And I'm hoping the people who are Cora Crossroads, you're sitting here going, oh my goodness, put me in. Now, as Jesus is talking with the Laodiceans, telling them that, man, you just don't taste good. Something is not, you've lost it. You've lost it. You were there, but you've just drifted into mediocrity. You've drifted into sanity. You've drifted into being like everybody else. You know, God's not asking you to have good beliefs. He's just not. He's not asking you to have a philosophy that you can win out in an argument when people have had 3 beers. He's not asking you to do that. He's asking you to align your life, be invited into his passions, and to go a different way. And so as these Laodiceans, who once professed that they were followers of Jesus, have gone the way of finance, gone the way of the textile industry, gone the way of normaldom, Jesus ends this little diatribe by saying this: those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. So be earnest and repent. He says, man, if I didn't care about you, I wouldn't tell you these things. I love you. That's why I'm engaging with you, and I'm asking you to change. That's what repent means. Change direction, action. Have a different action which will affect your passion. And he says this: here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with them and they with me. When I first heard this verse, the way it was communicated to me years ago was, if you don't know who Jesus is, you haven't given your life to him, you know, God's knocking on your heart, and will you just let him into your life? Let him into your heart. Nothing wrong with saying that. There's nothing bad about that. It's just not what Jesus is saying here. Jesus talked with people who've already gone through the spiritual gymnastics, already been baptized, already said, I believe, yada, yada, yada. But over time, there's just been a slow, steady drift to normaldom. And so what he's saying is, you're way over here, and he's saying, I'm knocking. And the question is whether or not you will act, you will get up and move, whether you will start acting and move, getting to the back to the place of passion, and that is where God will meet you. God tends to not just, boom, dump passionate feelings on you. He's just not done that for me. I'm in a place, perhaps, someplace, where somebody's acting in a way that inspires me, or I'm acting on certain things, and that's fueling my passion, but just sitting where you are and expecting God to dump passion on you, it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. You've got to make decisions that get you trending a certain place where the fire is that will heat you up. Now, I have a ask for you today. It's a suggestion for you. It's a immediate way that you can actually act to influence your passion. We'd love you to be on the team around here. We'd love you to be in the family around here. And one of the ways that's marked is when you serve around here. Let me tell you something. Everybody who parks cars in a parking lot at Crossroads helps free girls from India. Everybody who sits in a circle with a bunch of kids in Kids Club at the same time are funding and helping healthcare workers in South Africa. Because none of that stuff happens without a strong base. None of that stuff happens out there unless the people who are doing those things haven't come to understand Jesus and aren't fired up right now. We all have a role in the team, and I'm giving you one option to act. There's a bunch of different ways you can act, whatever your passion is, and I just want to really be for one right now. We've got some real needs around here to build into people, and I believe that you have a need to have your passion built. And so I've got a little serving card that we have inside of the program today, and I just would encourage you to fill it out. Maybe you know right now what it is you're going to act on in order to feed your passions, but here's one way. You can just take this out right now, and I encourage you to fill it out. In fact, everyone around you is filling this out, and you feel awkward, fill it out too. Just don't hand it in. You can just kind of... And I'll tell you, honestly, there's some folks in here just wouldn't be right to hand it in for various reasons. That's totally cool. But we're going to have a bunch of volunteers this week who are going to be following up with you to help you understand what is the right plan for you. What is the right thing for you? And we just don't want to give them a bunch of names of people who said, oh, just kind of obligated. If you fill this out and someone calls you, actually call them back. So what you do is you put your name, your phone, email. Are you primarily Oakley or Mason? If you're here, you are obviously Oakley, or yeah, Oakley we're in. And then ideas of serving, and then just pick one of these things, just one focal area, and then we'll have a volunteer that'll call you up and just help you figure out what it is. We don't want to have you, you know, walking on barbed wire or having you do some stupid job forever, like, you know, pick up used Q-tips with your mouth. We're not going to ask you to do some of that. We're going to give you opportunities to be engaged some way, and I think you're going to find that your passion is going to grow and fuel. And I hope that we love your help. We need your help in many areas. A couple ones I'll just spell out. Saturday nights, we really need some volunteers in Kids Club, and we're getting a place where we're going to start having to turn kids away. Man, when I bring my friends who have a third grader, I want them to be able to take the third grader back there, not just that third grader can get built into, but so my friends can sit in here and be challenged without a little rug rat pulling at their knees. You build into everyone when that happens. Saturday nights, we've got a lot of needs there and all over the place as well. Another one, CSM, our Crossroads Student Movement, where we build into junior high and senior high kids. It's a really cool little microcosm of activity and also diversity. You know, I'm probably a lot like you, where I like having models, and on the surface level, it helps me to see somebody who I can somewhat identify with on a physical level, to say, oh, I can sort of identify with you or understand you, and that could be a model for me. It's the same way with diversity. We've got a growing African-American community of students, which is phenomenal and awesome. And for those of you who are African-Americans here, man, you could have a major impact by being a model with somebody who on the first tier just needs someone that I can identify with on a visual basis. CSM could be a great opportunity for you to volunteer. Now, when we come together, we're not really trying to have some nice church service. We actually want to have a point and a trajectory to our services, and normally we end our time in nice song, put a nice capstone on it. But that wouldn't be appropriate for today. We want to leave us with the action point of where are you going to go, what actions are you going to do to fill into your passions. And we're going to bring up the lights a little bit and give you opportunity to fill this out. And then when you leave, there's going to be some buckets out there you can drop these into. If you're done filling it out or you're not going to fill it out, you can go ahead and take off right now or just hang out where you are and I'll just pray for you. God, I'm thankful for today. God, I'm thankful that you do not lose hope in me. I'm thankful that you are patient with me and that you love me and love us enough to give us truth. So I'm praying that actions happen today and passions are fueled.